Through a Scottish Prism, the programme that is unapologetically pro-Scottish independence and anti-Westminster rule. Everything we say here is viewed through a Scottish prism. Brought to you by Barhead Boy.
And welcome back to Through a Scottish Prism, folks. Well, it's not been, you know, I like to say it's been a week since we last spoke. Well, it's not, it's only been a few days. But events, dear boy, events, as Harold Macmillan famously said, have and requests from yourselves, to both myself and to some of my guests or guests today, could be plural, we're missing one just now, to have an emergency, if you like, prism to discuss what's happened in the last 48 hours, last week, whatever, because certainly things are moving at a pace that requires discussion. And I've got some questions some of you put to me to ask and discuss, which we will do. And I'm joined by one guest at the moment, hopefully two. We're trying to get we're going to be joined by Jagat shortly, but he is not available at this precise moment, but hopefully we'll get him soon. But I'm joined by Ian Lawson, my buddy, who is a buddy from Paisley. Ian, my friend, how are you?
Very good, very good. And still in a bit of shock at yesterday's news, but generally in good spirits, because I'm taking the optimistic view that things can only get better.
Well, they certainly can't get any worse. And I really do want to concentrate what's happened in the last 48 hours, because it's nothing I've ever experienced in all my years involved in politics with the SNP. But I'd like to go back to what I think this whole mess started recently, not at the very beginning, but recently, was at the NEC, which I know the NEC is a thing that's very close to your heart from your previous time in the party. But what happened last weekend was ridiculous.
Absolutely.
The point.
I think they must be starting off NECs before the meeting starts. They all get a glass of sake, you know, because it's kamikaze tactics. Absolutely. I mean, they are destroying the party in front of members' eyes. I've never even contemplated that such destruction was possible by people who purport to support independence. But there's, you know, no evidence of that when you see decisions like this.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes back to the week before at National Assembly, which they destroyed by...
To me, it's careerism, you know, and a hatred of biology.
Yeah, well, these are all things, but they did it at National Assembly by producing the 11-point plan 24 hours before it to say, well, really, you know, you can have a chat if you like, members, or mugs, as we prefer to call you, but it's make no difference. We've got a plan, and this is what it is, and it is the same old, same old. So that got people upset. And then we go to the NEC. Now, you've got a commercial background like myself, and you've been involved in business. Now, you imagine if you're sitting in the boardroom and your legal counsel turns around and says, well, this particular action you're about to do could be deemed, in fact, my advice is it's illegal, and you could be challenged in court, and you will lose, and you will lose heavily. Can you imagine in any commercial enterprise where the CEO, chairman, whatever, or the board saying, ah, never mind that, we'll just go ahead and discuss this anyway?
Well, it just simply wouldn't happen. I mean, there's no possibility. You don't voluntarily put yourself in a position where you can be challenged in court. You know, I mean, courts are expensive, and, you know, this party should know better than most. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of pounds disappearing in legal costs out of this party already without voluntarily volunteering to do it all over again. And perhaps even more spectacularly, because from what I've been told, the penalty could be as much as 5 years of an MSP's salary. You know, so you're talking, you know, many hundreds of thousands of pounds. Now, when it's a party that depends on a volunteer base to provide that money, you know, to put in the money for subscriptions, to run coffee mornings, jumbo sales, all the rest of it, you know, when you start getting into amounts, eye-watering amounts like that, there's an awful lot of events got to be run to cover that.
We should stress, Ian, that this is not getting paid for by Scottish Government taxpayers' money, which you listeners are paying for anyway. It's your taxes. It's not the government that's going to pay this. It's going to come out of your subs and your subscriptions that you're putting in to fight independence, could end up fighting a court case because these people went ahead against legal advice by a Queen's Counsel that what they're doing and trying to do was illegal. Now, you know the Constitution better than me of the party, Ian. Am I not right in thinking, or if I'm not, please tell me, that that is against the rules? When you, the Secretary knew that it was against legal advice, he should at that point have said, we can't discuss this. Just,
the very least he should have done was, I would strongly recommend that this item is now, you know, put aside and alternative routes are considered. You know, you certainly wouldn't have let it go. And I also believe that a number of NEC members raised that very point, but also went on, you know, to question some of the procedures that were being used, and not one of them was taken. They were all waved aside by the chair. Now, you just can't run an organisation, expect any form of unity, if even on the top body, the NEC, dissenting or questioning voices are not permitted to even voice that concern. That seems to me just to be completely undemocratic. It sends all the wrong signals. And, you know, what makes it even, you know, more astonishing, that perhaps might happen if the chair was confident that whatever was going to be discussed would be through, you know, 95%, 5%. But at the very end of this whole debacle, it was passed by her going against existing protocol where the casting vote is usually used for the status quo. She used her casting vote to pass it. So, I mean, it was strictly, and it was only a tie because one of the people that were going to benefit from it, decided to do the honourable thing and recluse themselves from the vote. Whereas two of the people that were definitely going to benefit did not recluse themselves as they should have done. You know, so, I mean, no matter where you look at this whole procedure, it's riddled with breaking the Constitution. You know, absolutely riddled. And that's not even taking into account that NEC members weren't given the proper 7 days' notice of the meeting and had the papers, including the legal advice, handed out to you, so they had time over a week to look at it before they came to make the decision. I mean, it's just it's a catalogue of absolute mismanagement and failure. There's no other words you can use for it.
Yeah, and then but the other thing is, we go to one of the people who benefited from that is that the Fiona Robertson girl from up there in Aberdeen. Now, at the annual conference, she was voted off the NEC. The members took a democratic decision and said, you're out of here, love. We don't want you on the NEC. We prefer other people. And that was the democratic wishes of the membership at large. Like it or not, that was the decision. However, by this new quirky constitution, whatever it just appeared, we don't know, it's been written, it was never passed at conference, we know, or it was nodded through, she was nominated onto a group of disabled. And part of this thing that they approved was that you can now not only self-identify your sex, you can self-identify a disability. And she's self-identified as disabled. You don't need to give any medical evidence to her, or, you know, even pass the threshold that you in the government to be in the UK to be deemed disabled. Just say, well, I'm disabled. Okay. And she goes to the top spot on a list. I mean, I've not made anything up there. That is absolutely what's happened. Am I right?
Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing is, I mean, she wasn't there in her own right. She was there as a substitute member for another group out for Indy. You know, these affiliate groups, there's no control over who they send to the NEC. They can send whoever they like. And, I mean, I know, you know, the story about her being self-ID'd disabled, and I believe she's now the co-convener of the disabled group. But she wasn't there representing the disabled group, I believe. I believe she was there representing out for India, at least that's what I was told. And she was there as a substitute. So you get this ridiculous situation where at the conference in November, the membership can vote her off because they thought she was doing such a disastrous job. But no sooner is that over and she's back on as a substitute for an affiliates group, you know. So the members' vote don't work, and, you know, she gets back on. And the thing, I mean, that would be bad in itself, but she comes back on, refuses to, to stand aside, because she's got an opportunity, a very clear opportunity, to benefit from the vote. And she then votes for something that she intends to use to get into Parliament. Now, I mean, you know, what's the point of having rules? If you're allowed to behave like that, what's the point? And why should any member tolerate it? I mean, just think what's happened in a couple of months before that, where branches all sent in amendments, all wanting to change the constitution, all wanting to sort all this out. And what happened? Those very same NEC-controlled committees threw every branch resolution into the bin and promised them a national assembly that we could discuss all these matters. And by the time the national assembly came along, they'd already taken the decisions, and the members were sidelined yet again. Now, I mean, if you're running an organisation based on volunteers, I think this is where the problem arises. There's the success of the SNP over the last 10 years has led to an enormous number of people being paid for their politics. Now, I am the generation that nobody get paid, or very few people get
in.
Paid.
We paid
we paid in. And I mean, a lot of people in the SNP to this day still pay in because of their loyalty and their commitment. But the problem is the people that are making the decisions, and a lot of them, are getting salaries. And not only are they getting salaries, the people that work for them are getting salaries, the folk that work in their offices, a whole range of different folks. And there's an army of people now on salaries. And their first priority, like a lump it, isn't independence any longer. It's keeping their salaries. It's getting more money every month. Now, you've got to keep these people away from the decision-making processes, or else, obviously, what you're going to lose is that drive for independence, because they're not going to be wanting to take anything that risks their pension, their salary, everything else. And that's where the SNP is at the moment.
I know, it's disgraceful. You know, the other thing is that this Robertson girl, she tried to get on the list in Aberdeen, I believe, and the voters, the members, said, you're not on, love. We prefer other people.
Sure,
so the people
that are on
the list, who have been pushed off, are the ones who worked the nine constituencies, who did all their bit to get to the top of the list, and now they find there's two people on the list above them. And they've got little or no chance in position one of getting a place anyway, unless, Ian, of course, the SNP aren't as successful in the constituencies. So it's in the interest of these people who are quite willing to gerrymander the rules, gerrymander the NEC, attack anyone who dares disagree with them, they could end up sabotaging MSPs to get themselves elected. It's feasible.
Of course, well, I mean, it's got to be a risk. If you look at what these people are willing to do on the NEC to manipulate things, what would give you any confidence that they wouldn't be capable of repeating it when it comes to an election? Except this time, the target will be the SNP candidates who are contesting first-past-the-post seats.
And when this word got out and got into the public, it always happens. It always sneaks out. And first off the blocks was Stuart Campbell with a fantastic article telling 100% what had happened, 100% accurate truth. And the social media went ballistic because, you know what? Someone had leaked it. Not that democracy had been destroyed, not that these people had rigged and gerrymandered the lists, not that this person who had been kicked out by the ordinary members had sneaked back in and voted herself into a number one list position. They were upset that someone had leaked the disgraceful behaviours to the general members.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reason for that is they've been gerrymandering everything. I mean, I've never heard of an organisation, particularly a volunteer-based organisation, where the executive have the powers to amend their own standing orders at will. Now, in all the years I was on the NEC, you know, whenever there was any really big decisions being taken where there was, you know, arguments on both sides, there was always a roll call vote. And each member, when they voted on that resolution, one way or the other, it was recorded. And the reason for that was so that any branch or constituency association wanted to know how any individual member on that NEC voted in that highly contentious issue. They could get that information. Now, they're all secret ballots. They're wanting to have secret ballots. They don't even, you know, have to decide what the voting system will be, whether it's proportional, whether it's, you know, Yeah, it depends on the issue, you know. And, you know, I think the most famous incident of that was the one involving Joanna Cherry further back, where, you know, Ian McCann, the party's apparatchik, took 45 minutes to read out the result of a Survey Monkey poll, which was used for the first time in NEC history. And which, of course, disguises totally the identity of the people who vote on either side. But the most interesting, I mean, those polls, the result is instantaneous. So why did it take Ian McCann 45 minutes to, as he is quoted as saying, tally the votes?
Let me think.
Yeah, exactly. That was my first impression as well, you know. It's just, and there's no trace, of course, of that. You know, you just scrub the survey and that's it gone. You know, there's no record maintained.
Here's another pattern, Ian, I'd like you to comment on. And hopefully our friend Jaggett will eventually. He's not been well, folks, so I don't know if Jason's still in his scratcher, but he said the dreaded lurgy, not the old COVID, but dreaded the winter flu, and he's not been well, so I'm assuming he's still in his scratcher. But here's the thing. They ignored the legal advice. Lots of money spent on this QC giving their advice, and they ignored it. Well, we don't need the legal advice. When they were going through the judicial review, £500,000 we know was Alex Salmond's bill, so we can only assume that the SNP had spent, Scottish Government had spent the same similar amount on their legal advice, which they won't share with us, of course. And the legal advice we do know said, don't go to court with this because we will not. The two lawyers for the SNP Scottish Government said, we are not going to defend this because if we try to defend this in court, we could be struck off. So don't do it. But this, right up to the, they knew that for months prior to that, but right up until the last minute, they just ignored the legal advice and only at the last minute pulled it. Yet, Ian, they keep telling us, oh, we must have a legal referendum. If you want independence, it's got to be a legal referendum by seen to be legal by the British government. Tell me, there's something not right in that scenario, Alex. Do you want to tell me what it is, Ian?
Well, it's simple. It's the latest excuse to avoid ever using. I mean, they live off the back of these polls, which they tell us are the best ever. And, you know, that only works with people that don't remember good polls in 2015, for instance. You know, and the bottom line is, if it's all Nicola, then why did it not happen in the years 2015 until the start of the COVID crisis and coming out of Brexit? I mean, the reason the polls are so high are because, you know, Nicola's getting daily exposure on a subject where people are pretty desperate.
Well, that's
for
one second,
I
dispute that. You know, I don't like to dispute with you, my friend, but I do. Because you'll find that the numbers in Wales for Plaid Cymru and Welsh independence and for reunification in Ireland have all gone at a similar percentage of upsurge. And as far as I know, Nicola Sturgeon, you know, the blessed Nicola as she is in the eyes of some, has not been moonlighting in Wales and Northern Ireland. It just all coincides with an 80-seat majority of the Tories and the reality at last for the people that Brexit was definitely happening. There was going to be no people's vote now. There was going to be no compromise. And that's when the flood to SNP, to Scottish independence, to Welsh independence and to Irish unification began. So I think there's a marginal amount with her on the television.
Well, I think, I mean, I'm often accused of being too loyal to Nicola, so... I've always been sarcastic, but I think you know, Brexit's definitely a factor. I mean, I know people that would never have entertained voting for independence, you know, before Brexit, who are now totally committed and desperate to get back into the single market because they see their businesses being potentially destroyed in the months ahead. And, you know, they are not happy people in any sense at all. So I think Brexit's a big factor, and I think that explains both the position in Wales and Northern Ireland as well. It's interesting, of course, as it noted, that the Northern Irish Agreement, the settlement, allows for referendums every 7 years, which is clearly a generation in Ireland, whereas it's 50 years in Scotland.
At least. If it's 50, it'll be some other excuse. Yeah,
absolutely daft.
But here's the other thing. Going back to the NEC and this absolute jiggery-pokery corruption. I mean, that's the only word for it. There's no other word. And if you don't think it's corruption, sue me, whoever it is listening. It's corruption what happened. I saw some of the backlash. It was Councillor Campbell, a Glasgow councillor, who is Anne McLaughlin, and we'll come into her shortly, Bidey Inn. You saw he put out an article talking about entryists. This is a guy that joined the party in 2014, talking about entryists. And he was in the SSP, tried to get elected God knows where else, talking about how, you know, we're misogynist and transphobes because we dare object to people self-identifying as either women or as disabled just because they feel like it. We're bad guys, an entryist. How do you feel about being an entryist, Ian?
Well, I mean, I'm a very, 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 very old entryist who was clever enough to see these opportunities back in 1986 when I joined the SNP, when they were, you know, at 12% in the opinion polls. Now that's foresight for an entryist, you know, to want to join a party at 12% in the polls and then, you know, work away. I mean, it was people like myself and Gil Patterson that we offered our own money to pay the salary of the first fundraiser for the SNP because the SNP at the time couldn't possibly pay the salary. They couldn't afford it. And we said, right, we'll appoint a fundraiser. And if at the end of 1 year he hasn't brought in more than he cost, we'll make up whatever the difference is. And that was the first time ever the SNP had a first professional fundraiser, which transformed things.
Yeah, I remember it as well. The fundraiser was actually Kenny McCaskill. And at National Conference, he was put out to do almost a stand-up comedy routine. And then made the.
That's right. Well, I mean, Kenny did a great job when he was treasurer.
Oh,
That was after.
Correct. And then he begged for money from us all. And that's what happened. The better his jokes, the more that they got at the conference. I remember it. And they called me an entryist. They call you an entryist. How dare they?
They call Kenny McCaskill an entryist. You know, I mean, it's absolutely outrageous. You know, and I mean, a lot of people listening to this programme, you know, we'll know the truth of all this. I mean, MD was around in the 90s. We'll have, you know, lived through the transformation of being completely and utterly impoverished through the introduction of Challenge of the 90s, which I started and which Gil Patterson took on, transformed the finances of the SNP. And it was, strangely enough, the same time, shortly after that, Alex Salmond became leader. And, you know, we actually had the money to do something about it. And for the first time, the SNP started making serious progress. And that's how we have our Scottish Parliament. Make no mistake about it. If it hadn't been for that happening and the SNP becoming a relative powerhouse at that time, then, you know, the pressure would not have been on Labour. The pressure would not have been on Labour, you know, to create the Scottish Constitutional Convention and eventually the Parliament. That only came about because they were frightened of the political consequences if they didn't.
Yeah. I mean, I've told many a person listening to this and then some of the things I've written. I remember when we were so impoverished in the constituency, even constituencies as relatively wealthy as the Eastwood constituency, where we had to pick and choose which areas we could actually afford to leaflet because we couldn't afford to buy enough leaflets to leaflet the entire constituency. That's how bad it was, folks. And we weren't the only constituency that were in that boat. Every constituency practically was in the same boat.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember that. I mean, I completely financed, you know, the entire Westminster campaign of Paisley one time. just to make sure they they had sufficient money to run a decent campaign. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very, very, very difficult in those times.
Yeah, it was.
But that just makes it all the more frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're getting, I can't remember how much it is, but it's certainly well over £1 million now. Mm-hmm. They're getting short money. Yep. From Westminster, you know, from
all goes out in wages to these
absolutely,
dare I say.
Absolutely, you know. But, I mean, you can't have two parties. That's the bottom line. You can't have a paid party and they're making all the decisions and an unpaid volunteer party who are getting ignored. It's not going to work in, you know, either the short, medium or long term. Mm. It's going to be a catalogue of problems, divisions and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, all the problems that we've got are all can be traced back to the 2018 conference where Angus Robertson and others who designed this constitution managed to put through in a very ill-attended session, that constitution, which if you looked at it, looked quite innocent. But in reality, in the way it's operated, it's been anything but innocent. And this is where it all joins up, you know, because that constitution moved the powers away, from constituencies to pick and select their own candidates, mm-hmm. you know, and gave all the power to the centre. Now, in the past, the centre's sole role was to create the approved candidates list, and then it was up to constituencies to, you know, approach candidates on that list or for candidates to approach them, and then they were in charge of organising the hustings, the voting, everything else.
Where was Jerry Fisher when this was going on?
Well, exactly. I think, I mean, he's probably drugged, I would think. They probably put something in his tea, you know, a couple of hours before the session, because I think Jerry would have seen through it, you know, without too much trouble. I mean, it was innocent looking, though, to give them credit. And I mean, what I don't think MD picked up was that all these changes, wide ranging changes across the whole constitution, all looked at, you know, as one individual item, didn't look too threatening. But when you joined them all up together, there was a very, very clear plan to take control of the party at all levels and to exclude the members from any ability to change it. Because even today, it is very, very difficult to get rid of any of these affiliate groups that are sitting on who are wreaking disaster, you know, absolute disaster on the party and on the fight for independence. They are the destructive force. You don't need unionists. All you need is a few affiliates, you know, who have no agenda that remotely resembles taking independence forward and who are trying to use the power that the SNP now hold through the successes of the past to, you know, put in a programme which, you know, doesn't even go to conference anymore. You know, that constitution gave the leader control of what goes in the manifesto. So even, you know, the conference can pass issues which become policy, like, for instance, they did a couple of years back on currency, that Scotland should have its own currency. But, you know, it's never appeared anywhere in the form that it was at the conference, nor have members been consulted, because the leader has decided that she doesn't want to implement that, so it's just ignored. And there's no mechanism in the current rules that allows the party to force anything that's passed at conference to go into the manifesto.
Going back to our days in the 80s and before even, but in the 80s, we all knew it was all about independence, nothing less, nothing else, that's what it was about. But now it seems in the SNP, if you're not into the woke ideology, doesn't matter, because it's not about India. It's now about woke ideology more than anything else. And that's a scary, worry thing.
Well, of course it is, because the big problem is that, you know, a lot of their ideas, where they might be trendy in political circles, are, you know, not interested, of no interest whatsoever to the actual electorate out there. And if you actually raise some of these issues, like the hate crime bill, like the gender recognition, the public are against them. And, you know, I'm not talking 50-50. I'm talking 90-10, 95-5. You know, they are against them, seriously against them. So, I mean, all we're doing is giving people loads and loads of excuses why not to vote SNP. You know, the idea of a political party is to try and attract support and, you know, move the party forward. All the SNP have been doing since Nicola took over is putting in place policies that if people find out about them, they would run a mile.
I know. But here that brings me on. So we've had this disaster of a National Assembly where they've cut the legs away from the members the day before it even starts. And then they compound it. They go into this NEC and they break the rules. They ignore legal advice. They change the lists, put their own people on it. And as if that's not enough, they decide to double down the following day. Because what I heard at the NEC, it also happened, was that they tried to pass a motion to discipline Joanna Cherry. And it failed because they introduced it that day. And you need a two-thirds majority when you do that. As I say, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But it would have only got a pass. Again, Kirsten Oswald would have had to have passed it to give the extra vote. But it couldn't pass because they didn't have a two-thirds majority. No.
My understanding is they didn't put it to the vote.
Right, because it was there,
but they weren't going to get the vote, so it was postponed for another time. So, you know, that basically never happened. But, the signal was there that they were wanting to take action against Joanna Cherry. So having been unable to do so...
brings me nicely on. Yeah. I mean, I don't believe in coincidences at the best of times. In politics, I absolutely don't believe in coincidences. So we've got that in place. And prior to that, we all know this, but, you know, Nicola made, you know, four or five of the Wokerati left the party crying and gunning about abuse, which we never see. It's like the Susan Calman abuse. We never see this abuse we keep hearing about. But they leave because they've been abused. What it seems strikes an abuse, saying, I think women's rights need protected. That apparently makes you a transphobe and abusive. And she goes on bleating and greeting that they've left. Come home, we miss you, we love you, we need you, we can't survive without you. But in the last 24 hours, thousands have left the SNP. Thousands, literally thousands of members have left after what happened when they go after Joanna Cherry and others. All the people who are speaking up for independence and women's rights have been sidelined in the party. And they throw Joanna Cherry on the back benches, our most articulate, intellectual, the one that's taken on and defeated Boris Johnson and the British government, single-handed, honestly, and she's deemed to be replaceable by Anne McLaughlin, a failed drama student. It beggars belief, Ian.
Well, I think it just signals what is the strategy? And there's no strategy for independence. What there is a strategy for themselves. But, I mean, it's a very, very short-sighted strategy because this is not sustainable. You know, one or two things are going to happen. You know, either, you know, the SNP changed their ways and very, very quickly, or there's going to be an electoral disaster. Now, electoral disasters come in many shapes and forms. The worst electoral disaster for Scotland would be the SNP winning in May, thinking that nothing's wrong, and then introducing hate crime bill legislation, gender recognition, all the rest of it. And, you know, the votes will disappear like snow off a dike at that point. But the cost of that will be that they'll have lost their activist base. Now, you know, the Tories have never had an activist base worth talking about in Scotland, but what the Tories have got is money. So they can use the... they've got the media behind them and they can use the post office or whatever to get around and deliver all their leaflets for them. The SNP don't have that money. And any money they did have, they've managed to chase away. There's not the big donors or any of the big donors left that used to come along. So they're very reliant on ordinary members. But, you know, what are they doing to ordinary members? They're destroying ordinary members' faith in the party. And, you know, all these, I mean, I've been tossing in my mind whether to put something on Twitter about calling for the results of the woke financial appeal, you know, with questions like, are you prepared to sacrifice a dress for the party? You know, you know, Don't buy
oh,
those
Oh, you're
feelings.
In trouble now, big man.
Well, I'm quite happy to be in trouble because somebody needs to stand up to these people. Somebody needs to have the bottle to say to them, you know, get real. Get real. It's about time people in this party recognised that you can't sit in the sidelines and let these things happen. Folk need to speak out, you know, because I love the SNP. I loved it when I was a member. Terribly proud to be part of it. Thought it was so democratic, genuinely democratic, and I loved that. And I was away because I was away being the consul for Estonia and I wasn't allowed to be in a political party. But the minute I came back, you know, I would have joined the SNP if I hadn't decided to write a blog. But if you write a blog, and you'll know this, Roddy, you've got to be free to write on any matter. And you can't do that in a party like the SNP, particularly when all these woke folk were about.